This is Sustainable East End, a show about land use, energy and water resources, transportation, and the farming and food industries on the eastern end of Long Island. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. Last week, co-producer Tony Ernst visited Sylvester Manor Educational Farm on Shelter Island to learn about a project designed to prove the effectiveness of a unique method of wastewater treatment. Tony spoke with Sarah Gordon, planning and conservation consultant for the farm, about the constructed wetland septic system. The land on which the manor sits was originally 8,000 acres acquired by the English-born colonist Nathaniel Sylvester in the 17th century. When he died in 1680, the estate and 23 African slaves were inherited by his descendants. Most recently, in 2006, the 11th generation descendant, Bennett Connesney, with the help of the Peconic Land Trust, turned the estate over to the nonprofit educational farm. Sarah Gordon explained.
The gift of the land here was 225 acres in total from the 10th generation descendant, Eben Fisk Ostby, a remarkable man who made what we believe to be a gift of unprecedented value in the region, if not the country, 225 acres of prime Shelter Island real estate. He offered it to his nephew, Bennett Connesney, who is the 11th generation descendant of Nathaniel and Constance Sylvester. Bennett opted not to inherit. He opted instead to start this remarkable project of the educational farm and to put the land and the place back into the public realm. And that was the beginning of Sylvester Manor Educational Farm. You're standing in the formal garden at Sylvester Manor. We believe it's the oldest formal garden in America and founded sometime in the 1650s. And we are standing on a line that is the axis between the manor house built in 1737, the second manor house, built, we think, at the site of the first one because we've never found that foundation. And the Boxwood Alley, which is an X-shaped structure within this garden that creates the four main rooms. And at the end of the Boxwood Alley, you can glimpse the edge of our 21st century garden, the constructed wetland that is the treatment system for our alternative wastewater treatment project that we're here to talk about today.
Can you describe the project and why it's unique?
The first thing about its uniqueness is its very purpose is to not be unique. It's meant to be a pilot that can be replicated. It is constructed wetland. Once we can establish that it is an effective means of reducing nitrogen in the effluent, then it will be one of many. What makes it stand apart from some of the other pilots that are happening now is that it's a non-proprietary design. The county is moving forward very quickly and effectively with pilot assessments of off-the-shelf systems provided by a number of different manufacturers. Those are patented designs, and you buy them from the manufacturer and work with a local installer. This system is theoretically, you could build one from things you could get at Home Depot. It does require design by a licensed design professional, a licensed engineer. So it could be just become a routine part of site development when you have an engineer and an architect designing your house, and the sanitary system that normally would have been just the conventional septic tank and rings that don't do anything to reduce nitrogen to treat the waste. Now, if this system is proven effective and successful, as we fully expect it will be, it will be something that could be routinely folded into new construction or a renovation. And then there's the open question about whether upgrades to nitrogen treating systems may actually become mandated at some point with the help of the funds that are available now in the five East End towns and from the county.
Can you describe how the system actually works?
We have it connected to new facilities. And out of these new facilities, we have which are a kitchen and restrooms for our resident crew here at Sylvester Manor Educational Farm. We have a grease trap out of the kitchen, and then we have two septic tanks that lead from the restroom facilities and also from the grease trap. So in our case, I'll walk you through from the start. The grease trap collects the grease and some of the solids from the kitchen, and then the liquid effluent goes into the septic tanks, as does the liquids and solids from the restrooms. We have three public restrooms here, and then the rest of the facility is two full baths and showers and a laundry, which serve our resident crew. One of the main purposes, as a brief aside, is that we are looking for ways, and this was a central driver for this project, to reduce the impact of our resident farm apprentice program on our historic manor house. The crew reside in the house, they sleep in the house, but now they don't use the facilities in the house anymore, and that's a great leap forward towards the restoration. So all the waste goes into these large septic tanks, which were sized to accommodate all of our crew use and our program users, and also potential future expansion. And from there, the waste travels, the solids settle, and at a certain height, when the tank fills up, the fluid flows by gravity into the recirculation tank, which is part of the new design that you wouldn't normally have. Normally, your septic system goes from your tanks right into leaching rings, which just allow a sort of gradual flow of all the effluent and all the nutrients that are in it into the surrounding ground and down to the groundwater. In this case, the effluent, the liquid effluent, goes to a recirculation tank, and from there it goes through something called the level adjustment chamber into a lined gravel bed. And we're looking at it right now. It's actually just a beautiful garden with native wetland and wetland meadow species. And the construction of it was a 14-foot by 30-foot rectangular pit lined with a heavy plastic liner like you would have in a swimming pool. Above the liner, we have a foot and a half of a large gravel medium. And above that, we have another interior liner that goes about halfway from the end where the effluent enters the gravel bed and about halfway down. And then on top of that half liner, we have another 3 feet of pea gravel, a fine gravel medium. And on the top of, so at the top of that 3 foot layer is the pipe that brings the fluids, the effluent in, the liquid effluent in, which is pretty heavily concentrated with ammonium from urine. And ammonium breaks down into a number of things, including nitrogen, and that's where the nitrogen overloading of our water systems has come from, primarily the vast number of individual on-site septic systems that make up wastewater treatment in Suffolk County. So that flows horizontally into a bunch of slotted lateral pipes, which are under pressure now. There are some electric components to this. We have pumps that pump the water under pressure into the laterals. They're sprayed through manifolds so that they are evenly distributed through this 3 foot deep pea gravel layer. That's a layer that has oxygen in it still, that just works its way in from the exterior and through the activity of the root system of the plants. That first step in the process breaks the ammonium down into nitrites and nitrates. And rather than those nitrogen components then going right into the groundwater, they instead are held in this bed. They drop down past the midpoint liner into an anoxic layer, the lower layer, 18 inches of larger gravel medium that has no oxygen in it. And it's there that the biological activity, which is just naturally occurring, breaks the molecules apart so that the nitrogen is released as gas. And the remaining elements that go out into the leaching rings, which we do have conventional leaching rings on the far end of this system, has had a tremendous reduction of the amount of nitrogen. We're shooting for 90% reduction in the summer. The target for approval of the system, for success of the system, would be 19 parts parts per million or milligrams per liter of nitrogen. If it can achieve that on a consistent basis over the first two seasons of use that the county will be monitoring, then this system will be ready to go to the next phase of the pilot and eventual provisional use and routine approval.
We're looking at what looks like from this distance a garden, and it's about 20 by 30 feet, is that correct?
14 by 30.
The plantings are actually not essential to the function.
They are, that's true in the sense that you can build a constructed wetland that does not have surface vegetation. There are other variations of this being studied and in the works. We're working closely with the New York State Center for Clean Water Technology at Stony Brook. One of their students, Samantha Roberts, is doing her dissertation for her PhD on constructed wetlands. So we're studying it. The root systems of the plants perform a couple of functions. They do uptake nitrogen, naturally. That's mm-hmm. why people use nitrogen as a fertilizer, because it feeds plants. So we think about 10% of the nitrogen reduction, it's sometimes called polishing, is happening because of the plant matter. In our case, it was deemed a really desirable, maybe even an essential part of the design for us, because it has the aesthetic piece.
Is it possible to conceive of this as a community facility? So if you had a group of several homes, they would share such a system?
Yes, that is possible. I know that some of the towns are looking at serving communities that have, and particularly small lot developments where there are a lot of little systems in a close concentration. They have done some consideration of finding vacant lots or at least a little bit of area within some of these large communities to put some sort of a community treatment system. There are other technologies. You know, one of the things that's so extraordinary right now is that there's a great deal of financial resources being targeted at this problem in Suffolk County, and a lot of solutions are being floated and are coming to bear. I don't know to what extent a system just like this one, with the vegetation and some of the maintenance concerns, would function for a community system, but it certainly has the technological ability to process the nitrogen. We sized and sited it so that it could be expanded also. We might take, if we do additional permanent facilities in this area, the ones that you're looking at now are a temporary kitchen and restroom while we do our master plan and mm-hmm. permanent development. We will have tanks at those units and pipe the liquid effluent over here, which can be done quite simply these days. We might even pipe liquid effluent from adaptive reuse of these barns over here if they were to get fixed up, and from the neighbor who lives down the road here. And we could theoretically bring liquid over from the manor house as well, although one of the things we're excited about here at Sylvester Manor is that we are always looking to try new things. So our hunch is that by the time we're ready to properly and completely restore the manor house, there may be yet another technology that we want to mm-hmm. try. The manor house is considerably closer to the creek and to the wetlands than this site, so we may want to try something that's even more aggressive in treating and reducing.
Okay. You mentioned the funding, and I just wonder, in these days, is the funding secure? Or is it dependent on state and national funds that are possibly going to disappear?
Well, there's one very secure funding stream, which was the voters approved last November, a referendum that the 2% money, the real estate transfer tax that is known as the Community Preservation Fund that has been funding, you know, $1 billion worth of land preservation. The voters agreed that up to 20% of that could be used each year for water quality improvement projects. And the jurisdiction for each of those funds and how the money is used is with each town. And the five East End towns are working progressively on how they're going to make those funds available to address the most pressing water quality issues in their own towns. And also, the county has a dedicated fund, the Assessment Stabilization Reserve Fund, also sometimes known as the Sewer Infrastructure Fund, that is an ongoing funding source. And furthermore, the county has just launched this past, a week ago today, on July 3rd, a grant program for up to 400 new systems to be installed with an outright grant of $10,000 or $11,000, depending on the type of system, and access to a very low interest loan for the balance of the cost. So if you, it's pretty easy. The application is online. You can apply, and you're ranked based on your proximity to the surface waters and other criteria. There is an income component, so that the idea being that those who can afford to do the system without any help are encouraged to do so for all the right reasons.
This is Sustainable East End. Co-producer Tony Ernst is talking with Sarah Gordon of the Sylvester Manor Educational Farm on Shelter Island.
One of the interesting challenges of this program to address the impact of all these individual systems is to get consumers to understand that this is really no different from, say, your oil burner or your HVAC system. It's a fundamental piece of infrastructure that connects your impacts on your property to the ecosystem. And for all these years, there's some people who've routinely had their septic tanks pumped out, but most people only respond when there's a problem and something backs up. And people tend to think that flushing the toilet and getting rid of their waste is a free process. It clearly isn't, as we can see from the environmental impact of the algal blooms and the fish die-offs and the, you know, the huge depression of oxygen depletion in the surface waters. But it's, if you're to invest in one of these systems, and right now, as I said, you can get a lot of help with the upfront costs, it's going to cost a few hundred dollars a year to keep this going and to maintain it. But that's, you know, that should just be, we should just all learn to live with that and to anticipate it and to take these steps now while the incentives are so strong.
What types of system are applicable to getting the funding?
Currently, the main thrust is to get individual homeowners to upgrade these, particularly those who have, a lot of homes don't even have a septic tank. They just have a cesspool and some rings. So the main programs right now, the county program, the grant and rebate program, grant and loan program is for individual residences. And there are four systems that have been tested and approved, and there are more that are anticipated to be approved within the coming months.
So, are any of these comparable to what we're talking about here?
No. So right now what's available, manufactured, proprietary, patented systems that are have been donated for the pilot phase by the providers, by the manufacturers. It's going to be a little while before a constructed wetland like ours is something that could be routinely pursued. I am working now as a consultant with a couple of other business owners who want to do something similar. I think it's a perfect project for environmental organizations in the area that have some seasonal, primarily seasonal activity, and have the space for something beautiful like this. It's for Sylvester Manor. It was a wonderful partnership that actually attracted new donors to us.
Sarah, tell us about your background and career.
I think I'm not that atypical anymore. A lot of people change careers more than once, and I'm certainly an example of that. I grew up in Connecticut. My dad commuted to the city, and my mother's...
What town?
In Kaskab, Connecticut.
Okay.
And my mother's plan for me, my mother was the principal cellist of the Greenwich Symphony, and she started me on violin at a young age, and she expected or hoped that I would pursue a career as a violinist, which I did through high school. And as much as I did love to play, it wasn't my choice to pursue. I ended up going to Barnard College in New York City, where I got a degree in French language and literature. I spent a year in Paris. I stopped playing the violin. And when I got out of school, I found jobs in media, originally with a literary agent and then with a publishing company, and eventually in video and film editing. So I used my language training for editorial work. I ended up in a little town north of the city, New Paltz, New York, where I was the production editor of the local weekly paper, the Huguenot Herald. And then I became a mom in my 30s. I had a son, and started to become aware of environmental pressures on our planet in a way that I started to lose sleep over, frankly. And I decided when I went back to work after spending a few years being just a mom, best job I ever had, that I would find work in an environmental field. So I started at an entry-level job in a land planning office. Around that same time, I moved to the East End. I started working for a private planning consulting office in East Hampton, and gradually gained experience and time in land planning, and went to work for Peconic Land Trust as a conservation planner. That was thrilling. I was frankly tired of clients in the private planning business who would say things like, "What do you mean I can't have a deck in the wetlands? Get a variance." And it was a just fantastic opportunity to work for such an effective organization as Peconic Land Trust, really a great game changer for land preservation out here. Which preceded the establishment of all these big preservation funds. So it was an early motivator and ultimately partner for the towns and the county in preserving farmland and open space. And I worked for them for about 5.5 years. And about midway through that time, Sylvester Manor came into the hands of its 10th generation owner, Eben Ostby, who lives in California. And he hired Peconic Land Trust to essentially design the conservation plan for the property and to monetize the land through conservation, which, because of the well-funded conservation initiatives out here and the public's determination to see open space protected and support it through funding, we were able to sell the development rights on 83.5 acres of farmland. And bring in a substantial amount that became the initial endowment for the nonprofit. And I was right in the thick of that, negotiations over a number of years with the town, the county, and the federal Farm and Ranch Land Protection Program. And somewhere in the middle of that, I was invited to be on the founding board of directors when the nonprofit was formed in 2009. And then invited to join the staff, so I resigned from the board in 2013 and became something called a strategic director, and helped with a strategic plan for the organization. And I was at Peconic Land Trust. I guess I filled out an online form for the Climate Project, which was Al Gore's initiative after the film An Inconvenient Truth was released. Somebody asked him, "What are you going to do now?" And he said, "I'm going to train 1,000 people to give the slideshow all over the country in their communities." And I must have applied for this because out of the blue, one day I got an email inviting me, accepting me into this training program in Nashville. and it was a bit of a stretch. They don't pay anything. They you know, the project is all volunteer of necessity, so that no one could accuse anyone of making money off it. So I scraped together the funds to fly down to Nashville and was one of the first 500 trainees. I've been to Nashville three times. Once was for an international training when we had members of island nations that are, you know, sinking below the waves as we speak, learning to do this in their own communities and languages. And then the third time was a fascinating session when Mr. Gore had come to the crushing realization that it doesn't matter how clear you make the science, that we were losing the rhetorical battle. And we had an entire training on rhetoric and eye contact and persuasion, because we were being out-messaged by the deniers. And it was a fascinating experience. Whenever I find the day-to-day intolerable, I turn toward a mentor whom I recommend for anyone who is struggling with reality. Her name is Joanna Macy, and her website is joannamacy, M-A-C-Y.net. And she was the first to coin the phrase, the great turning. And the first that I ever heard say that even if the species doesn't make it through this time, it's a fantastic time to be alive. She's never seen such opportunity in her lifetime. She's an octogenarian. For the realization of the transition from industrial growth society to life-sustaining civilization. This is that pivotal moment. We're either going to figure it out or not. There is so much positive change occurring. When you think about the towns of Southampton and East Hampton committing to be 100% on renewable energy within the foreseeable future, and you see Elon Musk and the giant batteries and these things that are clearly the demise of the old ways of tapping fossil fuels. I mean, it's so stunning that we have the technological capabilities that we have as a species without the necessary wisdom to use them appropriately. And through this brief industrial age, we've found ways to burn off the energy and put into the atmosphere the waste from energy that accumulated over billions of years. And we, you know, we don't seem to have the sense we were born with to recognize the potential downsides of that. But so many do. I've, you know, seen people gathering and resisting and finding all kinds of ways forward. And one of the reasons I chose to come work at this place, Sylvester Manor Educational Farm, was it was wearying to try to change people's minds wholesale over an issue as controversial and complex and abstract as the changing climate. And I had an opportunity here to just do stuff and stop talking about it.
That was Sarah Gordon of Sylvester Manor Educational Farm on Shelter Island talking about the farm's work evaluating new wastewater treatment systems and about her thoughts on the future of the planet. This is Sustainable East End. More information about Sylvester Manor Educational Farm is online at sylvestermanor.org. Sustainable East End programs are available at sustainableeastend.blogspot.com. For Sustainable East End, I'm Francesca Rhiannon.